Hello and welcome to the premiere of Coffee Talk. My name is Trevor Huth, and I'm going to be joined by Nate Kosher, and we are going to be bringing you an awesome new podcast on the Pitcherlist Podcast Network. I'm really excited about it. Nate, I know you probably are too.
Definitely excited. Just like I drank a shot of espresso here. Ready to talk some baseball and get this podcast rolling.
He never doesn't make coffee puns for anybody wondering. It's all coffee puns. No, this is going to be a really good podcast, Nate, because what we're going to do is we're going to be talking about those lesser known players in the upper levels of the minors who have a chance to come up and contribute at the major league level. And hopefully you're hearing about these players first right here on Coffee Talk, because ideally you might be able to win your fantasy league because you made a really important ad thanks to what we were telling you. And I think for me, that'd be the ultimate goal of this podcast, Nate.
Yeah, exactly. So we're focusing on redraft leagues primarily. And so that differs a bit from if you're playing Dynasty and thinking about having these players multiple years, people who maybe only in single or double A, we're talking about guys that can make an impact this season. So that's kind of an important distinction to make. And so we're looking at those people that could have an impact right away or soon to help you win that league.
And, you know, I've been around for a while now on the baseball content creation world, and I assume that nobody recognizes my name, but if they do, they're going to be like, why is he doing redraft? Because I live in the dynasty world and I live in the prospect world, and I'm really excited to branch out and talk more about those redrafts, those one year at a time. I want to win this year because my team's going to be completely different next year kind of gigs, instead of being like, oh, my team's bad, I might look into rebuilding. Obviously, like, you can't rebuild in the redraft league. So I'm really excited to jump into that side. And I know I have my background that I'll talk about, but Nate, why don't you kick us off just by telling us a little bit about you? Obviously you're a writer at Pitcherlist. So when did you start there and what are you doing?
Sure. So I've been writing now for a little over a year. This will be my second full season as a staff writer. So I was hired at the tail end of 2022. I wrote all of last season and then will be returning for my second season. So primarily, I was a member of the reliever ranks team, and we're previewing and reviewing each day bullpen usage and who you can expect to have that extra save or who's resting and who's going to get a chance. I did those articles weekly, as well as just filled in on any general baseball articles. So news that was happening, milestones that were being hit. And then lastly, I had an article that I did every other week, which was catchers to stream, which is kind of a very niche thing. You don't really think about your catchers much, but it was sort of fun. And it did require some research and really digging into the numbers and figuring out who can help at catcher. And it's kind of like a kicker in fantasy football. You don't really think about it much. So that was fun.
Yeah, I mean, I draft a catcher at the beginning of the year and they stay there. I don't draft a second one unless they, you know, if they get hurt, I'll probably pick one up. Other than that, my catcher, just put him in the lineup, don't check it ever again. That position is accounted for. So yeah, it's got to be kind of interesting doing those catching articles. And I'll tell you what, that history with relievers is going to come in handy a lot too, because especially at this day and age with the amount of coverage that prospects get, a lot of the unknown ones and the ones that might help you are likely going to be in that bullpen. If you need strikeouts, holds in a saves, holds league, whatever, there's going to be a lot of relievers that churn through, I think, and a lot of relievers that are worth us talking about. So I think that reliever side of things is going to come back in handy. So hopefully you didn't forget any of it, because we're going to need it.
Yes, exactly. Nope. Still up in my head, and I'll be happy to share that knowledge. So excited to get this podcast started and sort of pair it with my writing for Pitcherlist, and also just sort of get to know you. We haven't met previously, and so we're working through this together, but it's gonna be a lot of fun.
Yeah, so the way this podcast came to be is kind of an interesting story, and it goes all the way back to when I wrote at Pitcherlist several years ago. Nick gave me a shot on the Dynasty team, and I started writing, and eventually got to know Nick a little bit, and I was a guest on a couple of his podcasts talking about prospects, and I even hosted what he deems to be one of his favorite podcasts that we've done is I played him videos of minor league pitchers, and he told us what he thinks, and he said that Mackenzie Gore wasn't going to be as good as DL Hall was his big thing that he was super excited about. Still is if you talk to him. And I'd want to thank Nick because he had this idea for the podcast and he brought me back to help host it. And I'm super fortunate to be able to do this with you, Nate. I'm really excited about where this can get going, but I think this is going to be another great addition again to my dynasty content that I still do. So I'm writing at Baseball HQ and Just Baseball and trying to get prospect content out there because that's where I focus for those who have not heard of my name before. Is I do prospects and I do scouting reports and all that stuff. And I'm looking forward to this as an interesting opportunity to watch baseball that I haven't watched in a long time. I'll be honest, for the last 2 years, I skipped AAA. To me, AAA is there's some prospects there, but for the most part, it's guys who have already debuted and they came back down and, you know, they're just trying to still make it. And so I stopped at AA and then I would obviously watch Major League Baseball. But I'm excited to get back into the AAA life and be able to find these guys. And I told you earlier, when I think of our content, I think of the one guy that I've been sitting and waiting on actually just getting his cup of coffee in the majors. By the way, coffee time, cup of coffee, just to make that connection right off the bat. Right off the bat. That's what it is, right? We want those guys who are going to get a cup of coffee. But there's a guy named Justin Durden in the Astros farm system who was an undrafted free agent from the 2020 class, which that undrafted free agent class is built different because there were only five rounds that year. But he came out and was, I mean, he hit, I think, a combined over 300 in 2022 between a couple different levels between AA and AAA. And I was like, oh, he's going to get his cup of coffee anytime. Like, I'm ready for it. I want to pick him up immediately. I've been watching him. And he never did. He hit 231 last year in AAA, and now hasn't gotten a hit yet in spring training and stuff. So you never know with these guys sometimes, but that's the name that comes to my mind when I think about this podcast, Nate.
Yeah. So that's sort of the poster child in your head for Coffee Talk and
something like that.
When we were talking about this, we had a tagline. I want to drop that at this point, which is where no matter what time of day it is, we're ready for that next cup of coffee. And so when you were mentioning that, like, who do you think of? I was sort of thinking of someone like a quadruple A guy, like Joe Adell, someone that super talented, but maybe they're never going to put it together, but it seems like, oh, they're going to get their cup of coffee. They go down, they come up, and just over and over again, and they never really break through. But we hope we will find the guys that do break through and help out your fantasy team. And before we get any deeper, Trevor, who is your favorite team? Who do you root for? I'd like to know a little about that.
I'm a Tigers fan. Thank you for asking. It's been a few years, but you know what? I've enjoyed it because there's been quite a bit of good prospects to watch. I mean, obviously when you have the three-headed monster of Casey Mize, Matt Manning, and Tarek Skubal at one point, and then as soon as they graduate, you have Torque and Riley Green, and now they're gone, and you have Colt Keith and Max Clark. And yeah, it's been a lot of fun from a prospect fan point of view. From a rooting for an MLB team to win championships point of view, it's been less fun. Because they just win-loss record hasn't been great, but hopefully we're on the way up. And Riley Green's like one of my favorite players that I have ever watched in my whole life.
The potential is definitely there.
Yeah, like I on this podcast, we're definitely going to talk about Yorbit Vivas. I'm sorry, and I am excited about that. And there's a lot of parallels between his offensive game and Riley Green's. Riley Green is a lot better. But there's some parallels that I'm really excited to discuss and it'll explain why I love Riley Green. But he's been a lot of fun to watch. Like, he's just scouting wise one of my favorite players I've ever scouted, even. So I'm a huge fan. Nate, who do you root for?
Well, I'm actually a Diamondbacks fan, and so coming off a great season, unexpectedly, obviously yep. A World Series run last year, but they're also in a fun current state with Corbin Carroll. Jordan Lawler, all these guys who are sort of coming up through the homegrown minor league system and who are really coming together, and it's been a lot of fun to watch. And so I didn't expect they were ready that soon as making the World Series last year. I thought maybe it would be a couple, you know, even a couple more seasons before they put it together, but that was a lot of fun. And Corbin Carroll, I think, will probably go down as one of my favorite players. You're mentioning Riley Green. He's just, you know, a good stud. Yeah.
Really, really good at baseball.
Really, really good at what he does. Fun to watch. And, you know, they have other guys too, like Alec Thomas, you know, great on defense. He's, mm-hmm. he's fun to watch. And I hope they can keep getting better. Drew Jones.
And they just, Davison De Los Santos was another one of my guys until obviously he got taken to Rule 5 and is with Cleveland now. But yeah, that, there's some fun in Arizona. Can you do me one favor though?
Yes.
Can you just stop drafting these players high and having them get shoulder injuries? I don't know what it is, but I would like the Diamondbacks to stop.
Yeah. Well, that's unfortunate. And I'll do my best. I'll put my call in, but they don't always.
That's all I can ask for. I'm not even kidding you. When I was writing a scouting report for Jordan Lawler, and to this point in my my baseball scouting career, I had not put a 7 on a guy. And I just finished putting a 7, a 70. It was with Prospects Live, so it was OFP at the time, or Future Value FP, whatever. But like his overall grade was a 70, which is really good. If you don't know the scouting scale, it goes 20, 80, and it goes by 10, basically. There's a few fives in there, but 80 is the best. So 70 is really good. It's considered very, I mean, nearly double plus, really, really good. I put a 70 on his entire profile. 2 hours later, the news drops that he had his shoulder injury. Like, not even kidding. I turn the report in, and 2 hours later, Jordan Lawler has a shoulder injury. I'm like, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
Come on. Well,
and Carroll has the wrists that are worrisome. So I don't know. Well, keep my fingers crossed.
Yeah, I'm waiting on Carroll to go on the IL for being too good at baseball for some reason. I mean, he's just ridiculous.
Yes.
It's just ridiculous. So, Nate, you mentioned that you and I barely know each other, right? And we both said yes to being in a pitcher list staff league before I think we even knew that we were going to be doing a podcast together.
Completely.
And it turns
coincidental.
And it turns out we're not only in the same league that's drafting right now, we are right next to each other in the draft. So
right.
when I say right next to each other, I'm picking 6 and Nate is picking 7. So we've had a fun time with that. And before we even jump into much of this content, this is a redraft league. So I kind of want to talk about this draft a little bit that we're in, Nate. First impressions, how do you think your team is going?
I liked it right away, the first 5 or 6 rounds. And then these middle rounds to late rounds, I'm not quite as excited about it. But I still am happy with the talent. But I've taken a few risks with guys coming off of injuries or guys who are high risk, high reward. So also picking out of the 7th spot, Spencer Strider was there at 7. I was hoping one of the top stud hitters would fall to me. So you got Juan Soto right before me. And then Strider was sitting there, and I was thinking, do I pull the trigger on a pitcher this early? And I just did it. Obviously, he's by far number one, and especially with Garrett Cole's uncertainty at this point, you know, his strikeout numbers, and he's everyone's number one. Then I went Turner.
For our listening audience, right? I got Soto at 6. You mentioned you got Strider at 7. And then closing out the next few picks in that first round, it was Freddie Freeman, Kyle Tucker, Jose Ramirez, Fernando Tatis Jr., and Aaron Judge. And so based on that, I mean, I would have taken Strider too, probably. I think you made the right call, but just so our listening audience knows, like, that that's what was around there. It's not like you were skipping out on Ronald Acuna who fell to you or something.
Right. Yes. Thank you for pointing that out. Yeah. So that's why I was kind of on the edge about that. Then round two, Trey Turner, you know, he sort of had a down year last year. I think he picked it up toward the end of the year, but I've always liked him, obviously power and speed. Then I want Ellie De La Cruz. And once again, probably a high risk, high reward, but just the potential that's there is unbelievable. And then Luis Robert Jr. and Bo Bichette. I'll say that's where the top five rounds is where I felt really good about it.
Yeah.
How did you feel with your first few rounds?
Yeah, I like your top five rounds. I think you did really well, especially, I mean, I like taking Strider. I don't mind taking pitchers in the first round. I'm also, just to ensure our audience, I'm awful at redraft leagues. Okay. I know baseball pretty well. I do not win in redraft leagues. And there's a very specific reason. And that reason is I play them like a prospect nerd. And that's why I will never win a redraft league. Like, I don't roster people over the age of 27 usually. If somebody gets called up, I'm immediately like, let me drop this veteran who I know what I'm going to get. Cause I might, in the mystery box, could be anything.
Yeah.
So that's how I play, and I know it, and I get it. It's how I want to play. It's more fun for me that way. So, as you mentioned, I got Juan Soto in that first round. I really liked that. And then I got Rafael Devers, who I feel fine with that.
That's one of those not maybe exciting picks, but like you said, a solid veteran. You know what you're going to get.
Yeah, and you pair him with Soto, and that's a good floor for your hitting, which is good because the next three picks I went pitchers, where I took Yamamoto, Scooble, and then Logan Gilbert. And I asked everybody right after, like, is that early on Yamamoto? Because it probably is.
Yeah.
And it was a little early, I'm sure. I wasn't confident he was going to make it past the turn just because of all the hype behind him and everything. And I have yet to have a Yamamoto share, and I really, really wanted one. So I took the leap, you know? Why not? This is supposed to be fun. You know what I mean? So I really like that floor, both pitching and hitting-wise, where you get Soto Endeavors, and then you get Yamamoto, Scooble, and Logan Gilbert. I think that's a really strong start for both sides. And then I'm actually very happy with this team for some reason. That usually means it's not going to go great, but I kind of love where this is at, other than my very, like, my most recent pick at the time of recording this, where I didn't set my queue up correctly and put it on auto pick, and I got Kenta Maeda in the 19th round.
Your Detroit Tigers, though, right?
I have enough Tigers, man. I have Lang. I have Isak Paredes, former Tiger. I have Riley Green, and I have Spencer Torkelson, and I have Tarek Skubal. I have enough Tigers. I've gotten my share of Tigers. I even have Hunter Brown, who is on the Astros, but little known fact, went to college at Wayne State University in downtown Detroit. So, you know. I'm pretty Detroited out. It's just I didn't want my Ada, but it is what it is. I mean, it's a redraft league. It was the 19th round. Everybody's droppable.
Yeah, good point. I mean, also, I will say your dynasty talents and preferences, I think, showed through in your middle rounds. You have Evan Carter in the 7th, Jackson Holliday in the 9th.
Do you know what's sad? I told myself before this draft it like a redraft person. Don't draft it like a dynasty person. And I'm looking through adding people to my queue, and it's like, if they're 30 years old, I'm like, I'll skip. I'll find someone else.
Yeah, I know. I actually think Holliday there, he was probably going to get taken soon, you know, in the 9th round. I don't hate that. But yeah, that led me to kind of think, too, like, then in the 12th round, I took Jackson Churio, because I was like, oh, I want to get a young, awesome guy too.
Yeah. You know? And I almost took Caminero. I waited 3 rounds to be like, listen, I can't do this again. I need to pick somebody that's not a prospect. I need to pick somebody who's going to start the year in the majors. Like, I kept going through it. And eventually, if instead of Maeda, I would have taken Caminero if he was there. I don't think he survived that turn.
Now.
Yeah. Somebody took him at the turn right before I got Maeda.
Yes.
And thank goodness, because I was about to take him. I wasn't able to stand it anymore. But just what he means by me having a prospect-minded draft, I'll read through all of my picks just because you'll realize how young it is. I got Juan Soto, Rafael Devers, Yamamoto, Tarek Skubal, Logan Gilbert, CJ Abrams, Evan Carter, Spencer Torkelson, Jackson Holiday, Paul Sewald, Riley Green,
who's in Clay his Holmes. Mid-30s. Just want to point out Sewald.
Yeah. I mean, hey, got to. Clay Holmes, relievers too. Zach Geloff, Hunter Brown, Kyle Harrison, Francisco Alvarez, Paredes, Alex Lang, and Kenta Maeda. So towards the end there, obviously, Maeda's old. Lang is still in his 20s, at least. Relievers, they have to be of a certain... Although, I did almost draft Mason Miller, hoping that he would become a reliever. And then somebody took him two picks before me.
Your team on paper, I mean, I actually like it. The picks later on in my draft, I haven't liked. Sonny Gray. I'm not sure. You know, he was good last year. I don't think he's going to have major injury concerns, but I just kind of panicking and I started to draft some pitchers. Also drafted Yuri Perez in the sixth round, which could be
disastrous.
At the time,
I think that's a good pick.
I didn't know yet about his elbow. I think that came out a couple days later, but yeah, he was there and the talent's there. And then I went homer pick with Ketel Marte in the seventh round. So we have a few more picks, and actually it might come up on the pod as we record.
He might snipe me. I'm just saying. Also, and I'll just throw this out for the pod listeners too. I will trade you Kenta Maeda for Yuri Perez. I'm willing to do that for you.
Well, let's see what happens. I need.
Yeah, just think about that one. All right. Really quick, Nate, I would like you, and this is going to be a very broad and probably difficult question. Who is one pick by anybody on this board that you liked? Ooh. Like just one pick that stands out. And I will talk while you're doing that just because I sprung it on you last second. I'm actually going to go Mason Miller, who got taken two picks in the 19th round before I got Kenta Maeda. In redraft, I know it's young guys like that aren't as valuable. And he's coming off injury, but his stuff is so good that if they put him as a starter, you're going to get some value out of him, at least in strikeouts, whatever. And if they transition into a reliever, he's probably going to be back end pretty quick. So you're still going to get something out of him. So I think that's a really good pick to take a high octane arm that already, you know, you may not know the role, but you know he's going to have one with the big league club. And if you're going to go young, like I do, I think it's very important to know that they're going to have that role. So I kind of really like that. That was Callan who picked that. Shout out to my guy, Callan. Sniped me completely, but I will give him the shout out anyway.
So looking through this, that's a good question. I'm also used to actually playing in deeper leagues, and so that seems like there's so much talent, you know, on these rosters. But looking at toward kind of the next generation of players here, what about Wyatt Langford in the seventh? First pick in the seventh round. I mean, I think he's going to make a lot of noise. We'll see when he gets called up, but he's been absolutely on fire. And if he plays most of the season, I mean, this guy could hit 30 home runs, and you're getting that at pick 70.
Yeah, he's pretty good, man. That's a really good pick, especially in the seventh. I mean, you get why he fell that far in redraft. I probably would have taken him earlier if I didn't have a separate league, a dynasty league, of course, where I have Wyatt Langford. So I was able to hold off the demons on that one. But I agree. I think that's a really, really good pick. I think that's a good call. Nate, we are going to take a quick break right now, and we will be back. And when we get back, we're going to talk more like what this podcast is actually going to be about. We're going to jump into some news, who's hot, who's cold, stuff like that. It's going to be great. Make sure to stick around. This is Coffee Talk, part of the Pitcher List Podcast Network. And welcome back to Coffee Talk on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. My name is Trevor Huth. Alongside me is Nate Kosher. And we were just talking about our fantasy baseball draft. We're waiting. You might get a pick live. You might hear me scream at Nate on air if he snipes me, because I really want this next pick that I have queued up. So we'll see what happens. That's going to be interesting. But Nate, we've got baseball going on. Real life, actual professional baseball is happening. And it's happening all the time, just where it's warmer, not where we live in the cold states. So that means we have stuff to actually talk about.
That's right.
I am really excited to jump into this. And again, this segment is going to be more about what the content we're actually going to do is about than necessarily the last one. But, you know, it's our first episode. We got to introduce ourselves. We got to talk about our fantasy leagues. We got to just chat, right? So we're going to jump more into coffee talk here with our What's Brewing segment. And that is when we're going to bring up different news stories. We're going to talk about them. And they're going to be all involving those kind of roster bubbly kind of guys. And I say roster bubbly kind of guys. And the first news segment that I'm going to bring up is an opening day starter announcement. So maybe not roster bubble, but it's a guy who I feel like just we haven't seen in a few years. I'm guessing because of injury. Maybe he just got hyped up too quick. And that's Garrett Crochet. If you guys remember, Garrett Crochet was a first-round pick in 2020, the COVID year, which means he debuted that year without actually playing a minor league game. And since then, I don't think he's really pitched that much. I mean, I haven't heard his name really, and he's been mostly a reliever when he has pitched. And that's probably led to his anonymity as well. But he's been in the league since 2020, and he was just named the White Sox opening day starter in the wake of the Dylan Cease trade. I mean, Nate, do you have any thoughts about that?
Well, yeah, the Cease trade, we knew he was going to be moved most likely, right? It was just, was it going to be to the Yankees or where was he going to go? Thus, the White Sox rotation was sort of in flux. But he hasn't even started. He doesn't have one career start. He's just, as you said, career of relief so far. And so
I'm seeing this as you're saying this. He's the ninth pitcher in history to make his first career start on opening day.
That's pretty shocking. Only nine. Think of how many baseball players and how many years MLB has been around. I guess it's better than starting like World Series game one.
That'd be crazy. The first time it happened was in 1920. By the way, shout out to Sarah Langs on Twitter for this information. None of this is coming from my own research, which I'm sure you'll find is normal. I take other people's facts, but I will credit them. So according to Sarah Langs, or Slangs on Sports on X, if you will, it happened first in 1920. A guy by the name of Eddie Ears, E-A-Y-R-S is his name. And the last time it happened was 2014.
Who did we have in 2014? Is it listed there?
Tanner Sheppers.
Don't recall.
I could not tell you what team that was.
Nope.
I'm going to guess the Nationals, but let's just see what's going on. I'm just a wild guess. I'm looking up right now. But, I mean, so it doesn't happen a lot. And so that's kind of cool for Garrett Crochet to have this distinction going along with him. It was definitely the Texas Rangers.
Okay, the Rangers.
He had played two seasons before. He had a total of 175 appearances. No, not 175. I'm so wrong on that. 115. Whoops.
Well, that's probably... Well, not quite double. Here, Crochet, I'm seeing, has 72 career appearances.
Yeah.
But relatively strong numbers, 2.71 ERA and 85 strikeouts with a 3-7 record. And he was surprised. He said he's very shocked, to say the least.
And but, so the question here, Nate, and the question on everybody's mind, should you add Garrett Crochet to your redraft rosters? Is it worth it?
Valid question. So if you think about the White Sox, the last few years haven't gone as they've wanted, and it seemed maybe they were putting together a team last year, 2 years ago, that would want to go to the playoffs, and you know, they're making a run for it. So I'm not sure how many wins, you know, he's going to be in line for, but the strikeout numbers are strong. He's a big, strong guy. He's 6'6", 6'6" lefty. And this spring, he struck out 12 in 9 innings, hasn't walked any. So it's probably worth an ad or a draft selection toward the end of your draft.
Ooh, I'm getting a look into your draft strategy now. You better watch out.
That was a trick question, I see.
We're getting towards the end. Yeah, that's the only reason I asked it. So, yeah, I mean, you're talking about a guy who back in 2020 was pretty well over in the triple-digit world. He's had injuries since then. He's lived and known mostly for his big breaking ball. I think of it as a slider, but I think it might be a curveball, and I might be wrong on that. And every time that I have watched it, I can tell you that my takeaway is that you're watching a relief pitcher.
Yep.
But that's because he was acting in a relief role. So there's a lot of things that are different when you're, you know, acting as a reliever or acting as a starter. And I am not sure if I can comfortably say he's worth, you know, worth an ad, maybe an ad. And if you can keep him on your bench to watch it.
True.
I can tell you that I immediately added him in one of my dynasty leagues just to see what happens. Fair. Right. Cause I'm interested. This is a guy who has a ton of baseball talent. It's a 70 breaking pitch is, or it's definitely a plus breaking ball. Fangraphs has a 70 on it. It's just a matter of how's he going to look, because he looked pretty good in 2021, as you mentioned, with the strikeout rates. The walk rates were pretty high, and then he comes back and kind of looks similar in his very short stints of 12 innings in 2023. So you wonder if, with the walk numbers and the walk history, if he'll be able to handle a starting role. Mm-hmm. Because those walks hurt you a lot more when you're stretching yourself out over several innings rather than just one, maybe two.
Yeah.
My other question about him starting is, I don't recall off the top of my head if he has something to get opposite-handed hitters out, or if he's just a big fastball and a big breaking ball. And sure, it can work, right? It can absolutely work if you are a two-pitch guy. Look at Tyler Glasnow. I'm not saying it can't. I'm not saying you need that third pitch. But if you're going to do something like Tyler Glasnow, you probably need your fastball and your off-speed pitch both to be plus, which arguably Garrett Crochet has. But you also need that a level of command. And I think that's where you might lose Garrett Crochet. Is he might have two pitches, and he might not have the command to get away with it. In the short term, he might be able to do pretty well in a starting role. I just don't know if it lasts long term. So I don't think this is the guy you're looking at to try and solve your starting pitching issues through the rest of the year. I think this is a guy you're looking at to maybe get you a few starts at the beginning and see what happens.
Yeah, so hypothetically, maybe opening day, he looks great. No one has seen him. A lot of people may add him, but the success might not, you know, be able to be maintained.
I can tell you that if he comes out opening day and he looks really good, I'm going to be looking to sell high. And if you're in the league that I added Garrett Crochet in, I will not be looking to sell high. I will give you a fair price. No, I will be looking to sell high if he comes out like guns blazing and looks like an amazing pitcher. I don't think personally I'd feel comfortable holding on to him through the success because it's of it being sustained. I think he's one where I would be worried enough about him sustaining it where I would be have no problem trading.
Sure.
So there's one bit of news, but what else is brewing, Nate? Let's see. How about some, we thought he was going to make the roster news and he didn't. Kyle Manzardo sent down by the Cleveland Guardians today. And I think everybody thought he was destined to be that opening day first baseman.
Yeah, that was surprising. It's not like he struggled either. I think most people had him projected even before his spring, and he's hitting, you know, we were talking off air about spring training stats and how much do you read into them, but he's hitting .381 and has done everything he can, I would think, but they sent him down today. What is your angle on this?
I mean, there's a surprising lack of first baseman on this roster. I think that's what's most surprising to me. I mean, you obviously have Josh Naylor. Mm-hmm. You can put Arias there at some point, but I'm pretty sure he's going to be playing a lot of infield for you. Like, you're going to want him elsewhere. I mean, Roster Resource, he's listed as the starting shortstop, Gabriel Arias for the Guardians. And I mean, it's the Guardians. I've watched them long enough to know they'll be fine. They'll figure it out. I think maybe their one drawback with Manzardo is that they didn't need another corner infielder taking up a roster spot right now. And I think they got kind of locked in with Davison De Los Santos because he is a big-bodied corner infielder. Like, he might end up at first base. He may not be a third baseman long term. And that might be the reason they're like, well, we need to vary it up. We got to make sure we get, Tyler Freeman and Will Brennan, and we have our backup catcher, and we make sure we have all the relievers we need. So it might have just been a roster crunch thing.
Yeah, just
also
squeezed.
Also, Chase DeLauter is still up. And I don't think at this point that it means he's going to make the roster. I think maybe he's just staying a few extra days. But it could speak to the fact that they were more impressed with DeLauter than they were with Manzardo. And they want DeLauter to get extra looks, and maybe they're thinking they could move him or one of their other outfielders over to first base to just kind of make it work. I mean, the Guardians are so good at putting these puzzle pieces together and knowing what puzzle pieces they have and knowing what puzzle pieces they're going to have and figuring out how it's all going to work together. So I have no doubt that they know what they're doing with Kyle Manzardo. That's not what this is all about. I'm just curious as to why a highly touted prospect who's hitting pretty well. I mean, he wasn't showing any power in spring training that I noticed, but he was hitting the ball. And you have to imagine the power is going to come. So it's amazing to me that they wouldn't keep him around as long as they possibly can, unless they have other avenues in mind for the short term.
He could also DH potentially, might be an avenue to playing time, but he'll be back, right? I mean, he'll be up this season, I would think, at some point.
Yeah, he'd almost have to be. I mean, and maybe they're just having flashbacks to Bobby Bradley, and they're like, man, we want to make sure he's ready before we do this again. Because if you remember a few years back, Bobby Bradley was a hugely touted first base prospect that was not pan out for them.
Yeah.
So I think that's definitely something that might have contributed as well. I mean, there's a lot of reasons. Again, they're really good at knowing what pieces they have and how to use them successfully. So I'm not too worried about Manzardo. It's just interesting that a guy who was touted to be the starting shortstop on opening day was sent down. And I find it even more interesting that Chase DeLauter stayed. I mean, not talent-wise, DeLauter's amazing. But just from a roster put it together standpoint, I find that interesting.
Yeah, that definitely noteworthy and something to look at for fantasy as well.
Yeah. So one more story, and then we are going to jump into another break, and then we got more prospect stuff on the way. I can't wait. But Nate, I kind of want you to jump in here. You read something about Davis Schneider with the Blue Jays.
Yes. So Davis Schneider is someone that is interesting. He burst on the scene last year. He was called up in August, and he made a lot of noise, but it doesn't seem like he necessarily has a path to playing time this year. And that's because the Blue Jays still have Kevin Biggio at second base. He can also play in other spots. But it sounds like they may look at Schneider playing in the outfield as well, but he is a second baseman, primarily. And it's someone I had drafted in my dynasty league. And the Blue Jays haven't necessarily gave him a vote of confidence. So it's something I've been watching, and wondering where he's going to fit in and if he can build on that success from last season. The Blue Jays also signed Eduardo Escobar and Joey Votto to minor league contracts. And so that, you know, those are both well-known veterans. And if they're going to keep them around, does that affect Schneider? So just a guy I'm following. Second base is, I wouldn't say it's a deep position.
Thin,
I don't know how you feel about that. So what he did last year, I was hoping he could replicate, and he's a guy with a lot of power, but now it doesn't seem like he has a place. So it's just something I've been sort of monitoring.
And, you know, David Schneider's kind of like the poster child for our podcast working. If we tell you to pick up David Schneider last year, that's our podcast working, right? I mean, that's
exactly
that's doing what we're supposed to do.
That's a perfect example of one of the, I guess we could start calling them coffee talk guys.
There you go.
Yes. So.
So here's the thing with Schneider. It is, man, I mean, so he had 29 home runs last year between AAA and the majors.
Mm-hmm.
And he hit out of his mind. He hit so well. Prior to that year, I'm trying to do math in my head, and it's not going to go great. His highest total of home runs was 16. Now, if I'm researching a player for my fantasy team, that's a red flag.
Right.
Just like if I'm researching a prospect, that's a red flag just based on stats. And I never make any decisions just based on stats.
It's an outlier, right? Though.
Yeah. Right, exactly. So I need to, at that point, you need to look into, well, did he change anything in his swing or his approach? What's different? What's adding power to his game? And is it sustainable?
Mm-hmm.
I don't have any David Schneider shares. I didn't trust it to be sustainable. I'm also very slow on breakout players. And I miss out on all of them. And that's just something that I live with, and I live with it every single day, and we keep fighting. But I'm slow on breakout players. It's just how my brain works. Like I watch them and I'm like, okay, they're doing well now, but like, you know, it may not pan out. Key point, I was always on the opposite side of Esturi Ruiz back when he was blowing up a couple years ago or last year, whenever it was. I was always kind of on the other side, like, I don't think it's going to keep going. I'm not quite with it. And he hasn't really done a whole lot since getting to the majors. Other than be fast. And he is fast. Yeah, he's very fast. Yeah.
We knew that was going to happen.
Right. Yeah. That wasn't a surprise, but it was the hitting where I'm like, I don't know if it's going to sustain itself. And, you know, I could think of a million examples probably of where I was wrong about that also. So it's not like, you know, this means anything, but that's kind of why I'm slow to react on David Schneider. I kind of want to see him do it again. And I know he doesn't really have the role, like you said. So, you know, at least half of Coffee Talk here is going to tell you to proceed with caution when it comes to David Schneider. I think he's a good player. I think he's a lot of fun to have around, and especially if he's going to play the utility role, kind of get some outfield looks, maybe play some shortstop, depending, whatever.
And yeah, he that gets bumps extra, his value. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, extra positional value because he can play multiple positions. That's something to for sure watch. But unless you're in a deep, deep redraft league, I don't know that David Schneider is more than just a watch list guy, at least right now.
That's fair. Yeah, I'd agree with that.
And on that agreement, I think we can both agree it's time for another break here. We'll be right back with more of this coffee talk. We're going to talk about the top 100 prospect list on MLB.com. That's going to be coming up here soon. Make sure to stay with us. It's Nate Kosher. My name's Trevor Huth, and this is Coffee Talk on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. And welcome back to Coffee Talk on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. My name is, of course, Trevor Huth, and alongside me is Nate the Great Kosher. Don't know if he likes that nickname. Didn't check. Oh, cool. We made it. Look at that. So we're going to jump back into some baseball stuff, and this time we're going to run down or MLB Pipeline's top 100. We're going to be skipping some guys. You know, the point of our podcast is AAA MLB. We may touch on some AA guys expected to start there, but for the most part, We want to talk about those prospects who have yet to debut and likely will this year. And this will be recurring through our next few podcasts. We're just going to start at the top of the list, and there's a lot to talk about at the top, Nate. We'll start with the guy right up there, number one, the former 1-1 overall. His brother might go 1-1. I don't know where his dad got drafted, but he was a really good player. It's Jackson Holliday, if you haven't gotten it by now.
Yes, Jackson Holliday. The genetics are there. This kid looks unbelievable. And you were talking to me before about the scouting grade. So I was thinking as we run through these guys, we could potentially highlight their tools. But he's a 70 overall. Mm-hmm. And it's just unbelievable. This kid is now he's 20, but he just tore through the minors last season. Is there any doubt he's not going to be a superstar?
Very, very little. So
big statement, but
so my one question with him, and this is what kept him from being. So if you use Baseball HQ, the rating system goes out of 10, and I had him at a 9, and had to talk about making him a 10. That's how good he is.
Wow.
I am worried. The only reason he wasn't a 10 and he stayed a 9, I believe, like a 9 with low risk, but a 9. And the only reason he stayed at a 9 is because I'm worried about his power playing to its potential. That sure doesn't mean he doesn't have any. And that doesn't, and that's a very minute worry. Like, I'm very confident he's going to be a legitimate star, and he's going to do it very quickly. Because everything he does at a very, very high level, and I think the power is going to come along with that. I have almost no doubt. I mean, he's 20 years old. Like you said, he's so young. And you mentioned those bloodlines, right? He's got the MLB bloodlines. And not only does that mean he has the genetics of a professional baseball player that got passed down to him. Like, I have the genetics of somebody who worked in radio, and now I'm hosting a podcast. These things happen. But he has the genetics of a professional baseball player. And also, like, the underrated value of these bloodlines is that those kids are around the park, which means they know what the moments are. So, like, Jackson Holliday coming in and dominating at 18, 19 years old in pro baseball, it's not surprising. He's been around the game his entire life, and he's been around the highest level of the game his entire life because his dad is Matt Holliday, and that's awesome. And that is why I have less worry drafting him in redraft earlier than I might on a regular prospect who I don't know if they're going to make the team. Because I think as soon as he touches Baltimore, that's it. Like, he's not going to go back down. He's going to hit the ground running. Like, I'm truly confident in his ability to do that.
Right. Yeah, that's a really good point. It's almost like the stage isn't too big for him. And he's been, you could say, a pro, quote unquote, since he was old enough to remember baseball, you know, mm-hmm. with your dad being in the majors. It's not like he's jumping from some small, you know, rural area and just really good at baseball and never seen a major league game and boom, now I'm mm-hmm. a prospect. You're right. I think he's going to be kind of a pro's pro, and he's not going to be scared of the spotlight.
And that, again, that's just such a huge thing. So we know he's going to be good. I want to roll down to a different guy, the one that you drafted. So we talked about the guy I drafted in this redraft league. What about the one you drafted, number two on MLB Pipeline's list? That's Jackson Churio. Since you drafted him, why don't you start? Like, what made you want to draft him?
Yeah, so I did draft him. After Holliday was gone, I was starting to think, when should I draft Churio? And I'm a Wisconsin native. I don't think I've said that yet. So sort of follow the Brewers and the Twins as I was growing up, both the teams. And so kind of always know what's going on with the Brewers. But just the power and speed combo is tantalizing, I guess you could say. And it seems like he's got a shot to start for the Brewers. And once again, I think he's also another superstar. I don't know about giving you my draft strategy, but I do try to look for the power and speed rather than,
like, so do I get it.
You know, taking, let's say, I don't know. I'm trying to think of a masher. I can't come. One's not coming to my head.
John Carlos Stanton.
There we go. And then taking Ruiz, you know, from the A's. We were talking about, you know, taking him later because he's going to steal 60 bases. But Chirio just looks like, once again, the real deal. Overall, he's a 65. Highest rating is his run tool, 70. His power is at a 65. But I think, once again, I wouldn't have many concerns about him. I list at 5'11", 198. So a bit heavier than Holiday currently. But these guys are young, and they're gonna put on muscle as they mature.
Yeah, so... And keep in mind, sometimes from a scouting perspective, as they put on the muscle, they might slow down a little bit. Not like crazy. You're not going from a 70 runner to a 40 runner, but you know, his plus running might turn in, or his double plus running might turn into plus. Oh darn! But you know, as you put on that weight to gain power, you generally will lose some speed. But yeah, you're right. I mean, it's plus or better power, plus or better speed. And I mean, Baseball America gives him 70 power and speed and 60 hit. I mean, that's insane. That is crazy.
Yeah.
So there's just so much talent there. I mean, you said most of it, Nate. So we're just going to move on to the fireballer, Mr. Paul Skeens.
That's right. Getting a lot of love on social media. I saw the other day, I think his first three pitches topped 100. Did you see that? I think people know who he is.
I'll tell you what, my thing with Skeens, Nate, with Skeens is the whole narrative about his fastball shape. Because they've discovered that his fastball may not have the best shape. I don't know how to put this other than it's 101 mile an hour pitch. I think you can get away with a bad shape.
Yeah. Yes.
It's still a good fastball, just to throw that out there. The shape might not be ideal, but you know, I'll put you up against 101. You tell me if you notice the shape.
Well, yeah, no, very good point. And he's, the MLB kind of profile of him points out his size, and he kind of looks like an intimidation factor with him, you know, along with the speed is one thing, but then this big, huge guy, he's listed at 6'6", 235, but just putting that all together with the velocity, the size, like you're not going to be getting a lot of chances to hit his pitches. And I think I want to say it was like 101, 102, 101 or something the other day. But the question with him is, where does he fit in? Like, how soon is he going to be making his debut with Pittsburgh?
Right. And you expect it almost to happen this year, assuming he pitches well in AAA. I think that as a baseball public, we got a little bit ahead of ourselves thinking he was going to break camp with the Pirates.
Yeah.
One thing about the SEC where he played college baseball is that it's not as good as Major League Baseball, the MLB, you know, those guys. So he probably needs more than 12 innings or whatever the number is that he has in professional baseball before you throw him in the majors. And that's just for his own success, even just to get a little bit more under him, even if his stuff is game ready right now for the Major League Baseball, just to get a little bit more under him, a little bit more experience. You learn, oh, hey, maybe instead of throwing this pitch here, I can throw it here. Or maybe instead of sequencing my fastball and slider this way, I can try this. Like, there's just some tweaks that I think you learn just from playing. And I think he might have been able to learn at the major league level. It would have been fun for sure. But I think we were a little ahead of ourselves thinking he was going to break camp with the Pirates. But I still would anticipate him making his debut at some point this year.
Yeah, and I think it's because of, obviously, the overpowering stuff and the hype. And I think people know who he is. He's kind of well known on social media and sort of a superstar to be on social media as well. So because of that, having that hype, people think, oh, he's going to, you know, start opening day for the Pirates. Maybe not that crazy, but you know what I mean.
But making that opening day roster, it seemed feasible, and it probably still is. Like, they could have if they wanted to. I think it's the right call not to have him do it, though, personally. I know I'm going to duck because I'm sure tomatoes are being thrown at me, but I think personally it's the right call to let him pitch a little bit in AAA just to get a little more seasoning before you just throw him against the best hitters in the world.
Yeah.
I mean, at this time last year, he was getting ready to pitch against Division I hitters. Like, that's crazy if you really think about it.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's just one thing with Skeens. Up next on the list is Junior Caminero. He debuted. We've seen him. We know he can mash. He just went in our draft in the 19th round. He went on the turn. So he would have been – I'm sorry, in the 18th round, rather. He went on the turn, so he was picked right at the beginning of that turn. Same thing with him and Evan Carter. We've seen them in the major leagues. We know that they're – ready, even though Caminero's not going to start with the Rays. He'll probably be up really, really soon. Carter, I believe, is going to start with the Rangers. At least he should be.
I believe so.
So I think we can skip over them just because they've debuted. We know them. And I want to go right into Wyatt Langford. Again, we're just running down MLB's top 100. Wyatt Langford sitting at number 6. It was said that if he had a good camp, that he would break camp with the Rangers. And all he's done is have an amazing camp. I think he wants to make the major leagues. I don't know about you, but I think he wants to make the roster, Nate.
Yeah, he hasn't done anything to take away from that. He's been tearing it up in spring training. And it's interesting because of Evan Carter's success coming on at the end of the year and then in the postseason and the World Series. But could we have maybe forgotten about Langford a bit because Evan Carter, you know, was so good? I think he's going to step out of his shadow, or he maybe is in the process of doing that right now. It's sort of like, okay, Carter, yep, we got him. He's good. And now it's Langford's time to shine.
Imagine being a Rangers fan and just being like, which one of our young outfielders is going to be a superstar?
Yeah.
Or is going to be a bigger superstar than the other one? Yeah. Like, I wonder which one of these guys is going to be better. They're both going to be really good. How hard that must be.
It's a fun problem to have. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm. It really is. And I'll tell you what, Langford is a hitter, man. I do love Max Clark for the Tigers. I am really excited about Max Clark and his actual potential. Still disappointed they didn't take Wyatt Langford. I'm not one to do that usually. Like, even when they took Jobe over Marcelo Mayer, I was pretty happy with it. I'm like, Jobe's a unicorn, Jobe's a stud. Like, that's awesome. It kind of hurts not getting Wyatt Langford, not because I think they made the wrong choice. I really don't believe there is necessarily a wrong choice when you're making a pick. And I like who they got, but man, Wyatt Langford could have been a Tiger.
It will be interesting to see, actually, you're talking about the outfield, how that plays itself out, where those guys are going to end up playing defense.
Yeah, you have Adolis Garcia, you have Tavares,
yep,
Carter, Langford. Am I forgetting anyone?
I don't think so.
I know that makes probably Josh Smith's life a little interesting.
Yeah, you're right. I just pulled it up here. Well, Ezekiel Duran.
Oh, yeah, Duran. Yeah.
Super utility guy.
Right.
But Evan Carter, I think, would get the nod in left field. And so I think that's where Langford has to fit in somewhere. He would be the one being left out, I think, at this point.
Yeah, hopefully not, though, because he's definitely earned his spot. And I'll tell you what, between Evan Carter – he was one guy who was taken on draft night and everybody was like, who, what, why? And then there was the Rays took Xavier Isaac and everybody was like, who, what, why? Like, you know, these are first round picks. They're both turned out to be pretty good.
Yep. They're.
I mean, the Red Sox did that with Nick York, and it hasn't worked out as well. But sure, you know, this, yeah, a couple of these organizations, if they take guys and you don't know who they are, you might just want to like trust them blindly. I said that earlier today. I'm like, you know what? I didn't know who Xavier Isaac even was when he was drafted, if I'm being honest. And then he was taken by the Rays, and that's usually good enough for me. If I don't know who you are and you were taken by Tampa, I'm probably going to just buy in a little bit.
Yeah, I'm with you. Trust what the Rays are doing.
All right. So just to round out the top 10, we're not going to talk about any of these guys, but of course there's Dylan Cruz, Ethan Salas, Colson Montgomery, and Walker Jenkins, who, by the way, it's going to be hard to buy low on Walker Jenkins, but if you're in a dynasty league, get Walker Jenkins. I have been, I mean, the scouts that I've talked to have done nothing but rave about this man. So
yeah, a couple years away or maybe next year, but
yeah, he's not a coffee talk guy, but just as a general prospect advice from a prospect nerd such as myself would be to go acquire shares. I have been like a madman.
Could you say he's percolating, Trevor?
I would if I knew for sure what that word meant.
Oh, that's just like a coffee when it's starting to like, you know, run over the beans, the water. It's just starting to...
Then yeah, sure. Not me not knowing a word live on air.
Yeah.
Let's go. All right. All right. I think that's a good time for us to break down this podcast. Of course, we'll talk about more prospects the next round. There's a whole fun list between 10 and 20, or 11 and 20. I mean, I was just looking at it. We're going to have some fun next week. Some of my favorite prospects might be coming up in that whole round. But until then, for Nate Kosher, my name is Trevor Huth. I hope you enjoy your coffee this week. We'll have more coffee talk for you in a week. And of course, we're always ready for that next cup of coffee here on Coffee Talk as part of the Pitcher List Podcast Network.